I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the Indiana Campus Compact, an organization that works to engage college students beyond campus. My guests will be ICC Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan-Blomquist, and Allie Nickerson, University of Indianapolis student. Please join the conversation. Call us at 866-476-3881. You can reach us by email at nolimitswfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're going to be talking today about Indiana Campus Compact. It's an organization that works to engage college students beyond campus. My guests are ICC Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan-Blomquist, and Allie Nickerson, a University of Indianapolis student. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thank you.
And before we get started, I have to do a little bit of a disclosure here for the audience. My employer, Franklin College, is one of the partners for ICC. I don't want the audience to think I'm holding anything back. And I also would encourage people who are listening to join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So, JR, I'll start with you. Why don't we talk a little bit about what ICC is, how it got started, and what brings us to this moment?
Sure. So Indiana Campus Compact is a statewide higher education association of 44 institutions representing 70 different campuses. And those institutions have all made a commitment to be committed to their communities in meaningful ways. The idea is we work better when we do this together rather than alone. How this started was in 1992. There was a group of six students around the state who came together to challenge their institutions to say, we want more volunteer and community-based learning opportunities available to us at our institutions. That then led to those six presidents of those institutions saying, we want to create a compact or an organization that can help us focus on this. And that's really where we got our humble beginnings. We've grown since that time, as I said, to 44 institutions across the state who have all put their hands together to say that we want to be a part of this compact to engage our students in meaningful ways.
And who were those original six?
Yeah, so IU, or Indiana University, Notre Dame, DePaul, Earlham, Valpo, and Butler.
And, you know, what was the scope of the project when they were first, the things they were doing at the beginning?
It started off really as voluntary services. If you think about pure volunteerism or giving back to your community through nonprofit organizations, however they may need you, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's shuffling brochures. Sometimes that's working on the streets, passing out pamphlets, homeless organizations doing homeless counts. It has since that time really grown to more community-based education. Yes, volunteerism is still important, but what we care about and what we look at is how does this connect to the student's education, to their curriculum, and how does this work connect students to their communities in a way that they will choose to stay here in Indiana beyond their time at their institution of higher education. And we want them to give back in all aspects of their life, so through their job, through their family life, and if they worship, through their affiliation, religious affiliation.
Liza, with 44 institutions, that sounds like a lot of cats to herd to me. keeping track, I would think, of all of the different things they're doing must be quite a challenge.
It is quite a challenge. However, our partner campuses meet with us regularly. We meet with them. Our staff members, ICC staff members, stay in touch with them and learn about what they're doing. And with a lot of our programs, the programs are based on staying in touch with them. So we give grants, we do events, professional events. So we do get to spend a lot of time with people from our campus, and that's how we got to know Allie so well.
How did you know, when you say you stay in touch with them and all of that, how do they connect with you or present their ideas to you?
A lot of it is with campus visits. JR spends time going to each campus, and we're not able to go to each campus each year, but he goes, and sometimes our other two program directors, Ann Weiss and Laura Weaver, will go also, and they'll put on workshops for faculty and staff. They'll meet with students. So that's one way where we learn what they're doing and then try to help them kind of hone some of what they're doing, give them resources to expand what they're doing, and can be thinking sounding boards as well with them. I also do some of the old-fashioned stuff where I have Google alerts, so I find out what folks are doing. I mean, I just saw one yesterday about PNW and a brain day that they had up in Northwest Indiana, which was a really cool thing to see. And so those are kind of some of the things that we do. We talk to each other a lot, too.
Yeah,
it shows how quickly things have evolved that you refer to Google alerts as old-fashioned ways of communicating.
True enough, yes.
but anyway, JR, I cut you off.
No, I'll add that we also ask for liaisons from our institution. So we're a small staff. We're a staff of five. And so we ask each of our presidents who sign on to this commitment to be a part of this compact to nominate four people from their institutions who we work with regularly. And those are folks who are advocates for this work. We do trainings with them as well. And they help us stay abreast of what's happening at the ground level at our institutions so that we can also respond appropriately by our programs that we offer, our funding opportunities that we offer and such.
Allie, how did you get involved?
So I helped one of my mentors, Dr. Laura Merrifield Wilson, run a project that we called UND Votes. At its core, UND Votes was a student-driven, student-led voter registration drive. But thanks to financial support from ICC, we were able to create a 10-week project with three main phases: voter registration, voter education, and voter mobilization. Our goal was to engage, educate, and empower voters in and around the UND community by not only registering, but updating registrations, making sure that people knew when, where, and how to vote, what they needed to bring to the polls, who was going to be on their ballot. And so I was able to, find opportunities like this through ICC. I actually met Lisa and JR at a conference that Dr. Wilson and I presented at a Service Learning Engagement Summit. And so we've really been able to flesh out this project. And we're already talking about, the mayoral elections in the fall and 2020 looking ahead.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about Indiana Campus Compact today on No Limits. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. Or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. So I'm going to talk because, in the world that I occupy, most of the hours of my service learning is now, one of the major drives, which in some ways is what we're talking about here. What, as a student, what did you gain from that project that perhaps more traditional or old-fashioned learning models might not have given you?
Yeah, that's a great question. One of the core parts of UND Votes was that our team mainly consisted of students in Dr. Wilson's upper-level campaigns and elections class. So these were all political science majors in our sophomore, junior, and senior years. So we not only did registration in the student center, we were also able to go off campus. We targeted Orchard Park, a neighborhood that has a large Chin and Burmese population, to kind of bring those resources to those communities, apartment complexes that are members of the Indiana Housing Project. So we were really able to get outside the bubble of our small community, our very tight-knit community on UND's campus, to engage people in the community. It was interesting to be able to approach people who weren't necessarily engaged at the level that a lot of our students were and meet them where they were. Yes, maybe they're registered to vote, but maybe they don't know when the next upcoming election is. And so being able to really communicate with these people, even people who felt like, oh, well, if I'm not voting for president, who am I? Like, why would I vote? Mm-hmm. We really got to kind of communicate to that to people to convince them that their vote matters. Like, you don't have to be a air quotes political person in order to vote. If you care about potholes, if you care about being able to afford prescription medication, it was a really great lesson in that sort of engagement, meeting people where they were. Personally, it has been an incredible opportunity for me to be a student fellow with ICC. Running this project, I learned event planning, scheduling. I moderated events. I planned for voter registration canvassing, which was something that got a little bit better every time. There was a lot of materials we had to prepare. And so not only being able to, do that on the groundwork, but being able to present our findings at a service learning engagement summit, being able to share resources and best practices out while also hearing from other groups that did similar projects. It's been interesting to kind of learn those best practices moving forward so that we can continue to grow the project and engage voters in the UND community.
JR, what are some of the most effective projects that ICC has supported and at which institutions?
That's a great question. We have supported so many projects over the years. It's hard to say an exact one that is the most effective, but I can give you examples of ones that have been unique and are exactly what we want to see students doing. And so, for instance, I recently did a visit up to Calumet College, which is in the northern part of the state, and students there, through support from one of our mini grants, they started a food pantry on campus for students who are food insecure, which is actually a rise that we're seeing at our institutions, that there are students living in severe poverty that they don't have the means to feed themselves while they're at the institution. So we're seeing a rise in food pantries, and that's something that we absolutely want to support. And we want to provide students the funding and the training to do that so that they can work with their peers to develop a food pantry like that. What also happened because of this project was almost a clothing drive, but a clothing drive that opened a consignment shop at the institution where students who didn't have the means to buy a suit or a nice dress for a job interview could come in and they could check out and rent or buy for a cheap price that outfit to wear to a job interview so that they're prepared once they leave the institution. And these are the types of things that we're seeing students do. That's just one example. The voter drives is another one, as Allie was mentioning. And so there are many examples I can share that have happened over our 25-year history. But at minimum, we really want to help students understand their place in a community. And that does not mean just their home community. Mm-hmm. That means the community they're living in for 4+ years while they're in college. And what does that mean to be a member of the community and not the campus community, but the broader community? And what can they learn from that experience that will impact the remainder of their lives?
You talked about how they use mini grants and grants. What are the size of the grants that are available to these students or these organizations, and how do they go about applying?
Sure. So we offer $1,000 grants to students quarterly that they can apply for these types of projects that we discussed. And then we also have faculty development grants that are at much higher levels to help faculty develop community-based learning courses. So the students are doing similar activities, as Allie mentioned, but it's tied directly to their course curriculum and their learning objectives.
And what would be the top end for the grants that...
Well, our administrative grants that we give out, which helps institutions think about their infrastructure development around policy change that makes it actually easier for faculty to do this work, is in around the $11,000 to $15,000 range.
Okay. And where does the money come from?
We have a strong partnership with the Lilly Endowment, and we have since the late 90s. And Lilly believes in this work. We've stayed strong partners with them, and we work in tandem to determine each 3 years how this work needs to shift to continue to meet our mission, but the goals of Indiana.
And Allie, I'm going to go back to you with your project. Are you talking about the mayoral elections this fall? Are you going to be working even into the primary season or the mayoral primaries here? Or is it more general election? And then obviously Indiana will roll right into the primary season in the spring.
Yeah, obviously, we're looking forward to both the primary and the general, but we'll be doing mostly voter registration leading up to the primary if people would like to vote, and then focusing on offering nonpartisan guides to all of the candidates in the general election. We're going to do a little bit of both, but it's a little bit harder to engage college students in an off-year primary. Mm-hmm. So our main push is going to be, hey, this is why your mayoral election counts. This is why this matters to you as students living in Indiana.
Well, and because you're based, are you focusing mostly on Indianapolis because you're based?
Yes.
U of I, and, if the primaries are uncontested, that takes a little bit of the,
yeah.
the drama out of them. We are talking about Indiana Campus Compact today on No Limits. It's an organization that works to engage college students beyond their campuses. If you want to join the conversation, you can do so in several ways. You can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Indiana Campus Compact Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan Blumquist, and Allie Nickerson, a University of Indianapolis student. I am John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please, stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, Director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about Indiana Campus Compact today. It's an organization that encourages college students to get involved in their communities beyond their campus communities. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are ICC Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan Blumquist, and Allie Nickerson, a University of Indianapolis student who is involved with ICC. And I'm going to do the disclosure again just so nobody thinks that Franklin College, where I work, is a partner with ICC. I don't want anyone to think we are holding anything back there. Liza, before we went to the break, I was asking JR about, the sorts of funding and support opportunities involved. And, he talked about the resources available to people. How do people go about accessing them?
If you are a partner campus of Indiana Campus Compact, then you already have access. We just need to get it to you, to all our resources. And on our website, we have a list of all our partner campuses. So anybody out there wondering if they're a partner campus of Indiana Campus Compact can find that out, can also contact me. We also on our website have a kind of an easy button that says Get Involved. Mm-hmm. And in order there, you can find out how you can become a member campus, a partner campus, mm-hmm. if you're not one yet. And you can also find out our events. Some of them are open to the public. We brought Eva Kaur in mm-hmm. to speak at one of our events. We brought Ibu Patel in to speak at one of our events. And those events are always open to the public, and we can find that out. You can find that out there, too.
How often do you bring speakers such as those in?
Once a year, we have our summit and an awards gala, and that's kind of our big showcase of the year. And we have Allie presented there, so we have our partner peer presentations there, and then we also have bigger kind of named speakers who come in and give a kind of a joyous keynote.
Okay. I want to talk about sort of the larger subject of civic engagement, community engagement. When we were on the break, I was telling you, just finished a piece for Indianapolis Monthly that touches on this larger question of civic engagement, community engagement, suggests there are some real warning signs out there that particularly as daily newspapers struggle across the country, we're seeing pretty steep declines in civic engagement and in community engagement. I would imagine that lends a certain urgency to your work right now. Mm-hmm. JR's nodding his head.
Yeah, absolutely. And let's be really honest. We're sitting in Indiana, mm-hmm. which for a long time has not been a place where college graduates have chosen to stay.
Mm-hmm.
They leave. We have a brain drain problem. And we've looked at this multiple ways, not just our organization, other great organizations out there, to determine what are ways that we can keep students here after they graduate, to reinvest in their communities, to create new businesses here, to serve in their communities as they did when they were college students. And I do believe that community engagement is one of the right avenues to make that happen while the students are here. We're also facing another crisis in our country, and especially here in Indiana, where there's a loss of community. I mean, Robert Putnam has pointed this out in both of his two prominent publications, that we just do not create community in the same ways that we did years ago. And this isn't a nostalgic thing where it's like, let's go back in the past and imagine how things once were. It's how do we re-engage in our communities living in a 21st century society that we are today? And the work that we're doing getting college students out in their communities to see ways that they connect, we are certainly hoping that that will connect them in the right ways to keep them here. One thing that we're doing in our organization is getting better at assessing that, right? Because we can say that and anecdotally feel like, of course this work connects students, right? You even preface that going into this question. But the reality is we have to show proof behind that. And so we're setting ourselves up in a way that we have a full-time director of assessment that we've brought on to our staff, where we want to begin to dig deep into that and look at, is the work that we're doing, one, helping students feel more connected to their communities while they're in college and if they choose to stay or wherever they go, but certainly if they choose to stay here in Indiana, how has that increased engagement in communities in multiple ways? Serving is one of them, but business creation is another, organizational creation is another, connection to, if somebody is a person of faith, their faith home. So there are all these areas that our work will impact and we're hoping will kind of address in some ways. It's not the only answer to the drain brain issue, but we're hoping will keep students here and in some ways help think about what a new economy or new economies look like in a place like Indiana.
Allie, I don't want to sound like the old guy talking pejoratively about that, but it is a different kind of world. And one of the ways that that things have changed so much in terms of generational differences is there are fewer opportunities for people your age to have direct interpersonal communication. Like, long, long ago, when dinosaurs roamed the earth and I was a young person, if you wanted to talk to one of your friends or communicate, you had basically two options. You could either go see them face-to-face or you could find a phone and call each other. Now, of course, the many ways that you can stay in contact, through technology and all that, but there's also a certain distancing quality to some of those. My question here really is, do you feel that sense as an individual member of that generation, that sense of disconnection, or you do? Okay,
definitely,
well, not in your head is not effective for radio.
But definitely. I think that one thing I noticed specifically with our voter registration drive was that a surprising amount of my peers who ran the project with me were terrified to even say in the student center to someone, hey, are you registered to vote? Hey, do you have a minute to talk? I think that projects like this are grounding us a little bit more in our community, and that really speaks to what JR was talking about. I think my experience mirrors that a lot. I'm a political science major. I came in as a freshman in the political science department, and I think another consequence of that technology change is the nationalization of political news. I came in, thinking about moving to D.C., being in a congressional office, something like that. Those were kind of what I was reaching for, dreaming for. But in my sophomore year, as I've ran this project, as I've become more ingrained in my community, as I've reached out to the area, I've learned more about local politics, getting to participate in local radio shows, perhaps, has really grounded me in my community. I grew up in Indianapolis, and I've always loved it, but I thought that I wanted out. And now is when I'm questioning that. I think technology has played an interesting role in that, it's helped me kind of find my way back to Indianapolis as well, through access to local news on a level that you might not have had in the past.
What's made you want to stay in India? I mean, what changed your mind about the experience?
I think before I got involved with ICC, I didn't feel like I had a lot of opportunities in my field here. I'm a political science and communication double major, and so my mind went to bigger politics. But as I've gotten more embedded in my community, in my university, it's brought the mind frame smaller. I've realized that I can have a much bigger impact here than I could at a national level ever. And I think that is really important to me, being able to create change in a positive way, in as big a way as possible.
J.R., when you talked about, you know, you have a director of assessment and all of that, how do you go about measuring this? Because one of the challenges is figuring out, you know, A, what constitutes civic engagement. There are very few people who will say, oh, yeah, I'm completely disengaged from my community. I don't care what anyone is doing around me or anything like that. There are very few people who own up to that, but we know that it is a problem.
Sure. And let me say, we hope that attitude changes where people do see themselves as a vital part of their communities. And as we're preparing students to become graduates and then become permanent members of a community, that they have these mindsets, like Ali was just mentioning, that there isn't this weirdness about talking about community engagement or serving or feeling like, not me, I'm not the right person. But as far as the assessment goes, I think that's a great question. I don't think that us alone as an organization can solve the problems around that. Mm-hmm. What we do is our institutions we work with, the folks who are engaged the most with us, right, are the low-hanging fruit. Those are the folks that we're working with. We're doing needs assessments with them. We're also then looking at if they have grant funding from us or they're involved in our programs, their engagement levels after that. And the way we have built our programs, definitely coming up over the next 3 years, it's a scaffolding approach. So our idea is if someone's coming into our organization, we can assess kind of where they fit and help direct them on where they connect to our organization to connect them to the next step, to the next step, so that we can follow them over time. And hopefully once they leave their institution, in the case of a student, we have more of a connection to them than some of our students who maybe have a one-time funding opportunity with us right now. They do the project and they kind of disappear back in their institution. So we're trying to become more intentional about how we're doing that. And we're not going to be able to do it alone. I mean, there are partner organizations out there who we will ask to be on this journey with us as we look at our assessment and our impact work.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about Indiana Campus Compact on No Limits today. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So, Liza, do you track, with in terms of the assessment, do you track it primarily from the student side, or do you look at the impact on the community too? I mean, is it, you know, one would think that part of the point here is not simply therapeutic for the students. It is to connect them in ways that are meaningful and have some impact in the communities they're attempting to serve.
Definitely. And there are very often we can start with something small. There's a student-run health clinic in Indianapolis that brought together UND students from physical therapy, IEPUI med students and nursing students and Butler pharmacy students. And this was a free clinic that students started in order to address needs that the patients had in this neighborhood. And that has become larger and larger and larger. And so sometimes the tracking of community partner or community members benefit from these things happened within the university, and we're able to find that out. So that's one way. What JR was saying with Anne's new job is to, she looks more at institutional numbers and tries to help the faculty who are working with students who do this work to keep track of the work they're doing. And then, like JR said, we ourselves want to be a little more intentional in seeing what students are doing and then reaching out to those community partners.
And I'll throw this to either JR or Liza, whichever one of you. Where are the places where you see a student project has made the deepest or most powerful impact on a community? I know, I'll give you a second. I'll talk here while you collect your thoughts because silence does not work as well on radio.
Right, but. Yeah. That's so hard to pinpoint just one, because well, so much of our
choose several then if
our
you
work
wish.
Is yeah. interconnected. And when I think about even when we work at an institutional level, we're not just working directly with students. We're also working with administrators to help them rethink their promotion and tenure policies for faculty so that mm-hmm. they can actually do community-based work and get their students in the community and not get fired for doing that or not get promoted. So mm-hmm. that's one piece of our work. Of course, the direct work that we do with students like Allie is another mm-hmm. piece of that. And it's all connected, right? Because if one piece is missing in that puzzle, mm-hmm. it creates a really complicated puzzle to put together. So we have to work at this from all angles. And when we see institutions who, and for lack of better words, I'm just going to say it, who get it, mm-hmm. who see the importance of this work, and then it has to cross all parts of the institutions, that's where we see the most impact happening. When institutions begin to view themselves as not the institution within a community, but simply another part of the community working in tandem with others to solve some of the hardest problems.
Liza, you look like you're leaning in there. So, okay.
Well, I was thinking about for our 20th anniversary, I interviewed Nicole Hallett, who was a student at DePauw at the beginning of this adventure. And she won a student award. We give awards. It's another mm-hmm. Way to bring people together. And she won a student award in 1999, I think, at DePauw for her work in the community. And I tracked her down and asked her for the 20th mm-hmm. anniversary what she was doing now. And she's in New York City, and she is an attorney, a pro bono attorney for immigrants. Mm-hmm. And she did say that getting started with ICC made a difference to her. She said, I don't want to misquote her, but I'm paraphrasing here, that she came into DePauw all excited about being a college student and not really thinking farther than her own face, but getting involved in community engagement and service learning made a difference to her. And the Hartman House there made a difference, and we've been mm-hmm. able to support them. And I think that it's not necessarily a student project that we can see in a long distance, but it's a long-lasting effect that has happened to her. And Allie, on our way over, was talking about how she doesn't really want to leave. She wants to be able to still be involved. And so maybe a project is an afternoon kind of a thing, or a weekend mm-hmm. or a spring break. But like JR said, it just stays with folks.
Allie, with the voter project you did, what were the impacts you saw, you know, within the community? What changes did you see that came out of that?
Yeah, so one of my favorite partners for this project was the Baxter YMCA in Greenwood, Indiana.
Swam on their swim team many, many years ago as a kid.
I love that. So you're familiar.
Yeah.
We reached out to their community director to say, hey, would it be possible for us to set up voter registration tables for, you know, 5 nights in a row, just 5 to 7 p.m. when people are coming in for their evening workout to register voters, make sure that they're able to participate in the upcoming election. I was coordinating with Baxter YMCA, and they were absolutely thrilled. They opened up their lobby to the entire community, not just YMCA members, so that we could really have people come in, get the resources they need. They had iPads ready for us so that we could help people register. We gave them their final registration numbers, and they were floored by just the amount that we were able to reach out. Personally, I think looking at just the registration numbers can be a little reductive. I think mm-hmm. that the real value in our voter registration drive was making voting accessible. Do you have a ride to the polls? Do you know where your voting location is? What's going to be on your ballot? Do you know who you want to vote for? Those types of things. Being able to see that in our own UND community was amazing as well. Even though, you know, we got a few averted eyes and people looking away when we said, hey, are you registered to vote? There were a lot of people who said, you know, I don't know. Can we check? And being able to really meet them where they were in order to make voting accessible for people, to empower voters in the UND community.
We are talking about Indiana Campus Compact today on No Limits. It's an organization that encourages college students to get involved beyond their campus communities in the larger community. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook @NoLimitsWFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter @WFYI. My guests are ICC Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan-Blumquist, and Allie Nickerson, University of Indianapolis student who is involved with ICC. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We are talking today about Indiana Campus Compact. It's an organization that works to engage college students beyond their campuses. My guests are ICC Executive Director J.R. Jameson, ICC Director of Communications Liza Donovan-Blumquist, and Allie Nickerson, a University of Indianapolis student. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. You can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what a listener named Ruth has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Ruth writes, "All age levels of Girl Scouts have great civics community engagement badges. I talk about this topic a lot with my high school senior Girl Scout troop." Are there, you know, continuities of service that that perhaps ICC explores or could explore? I'll start with JR on that one.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting question. For our organization, one thing that we are looking at as folks transition out of secondary education into higher education, how can we strengthen those kind of partnerships? And then we're also looking at how do we credential people around this work in higher education? Now, that's looking more at like faculty and staff who are doing this work, but certainly helping students think about how this translates onto their transcripts, how that lands within their resumes, how they talk about this work with a future employer. So there are ways that that work can go from elementary school into high school, spanning into higher education and then beyond.
Allie, you know, we've talked a bit about how it kind of expands the point of view. You know, let's face it, I mean, college very easily can become a kind of bubble. You disappear into this world. I tell a joke, you know, the State House File, which I serve as the publisher for, its roots are in the fact that when I first came back to Franklin, which is a small and intimate campus, and was advising the student newspaper, I couldn't get some of the students to stop interviewing their roommates for stories. And, you know, that didn't comport with anything that that resembled real journalism. And the way to do that was to take them out of their environment and make them engage in other ways. Talk about the ways experiences like this have helped you burst out of that bubble.
Yeah, definitely. You know, I started in high school doing kind of minor community service work, things like, you know, trash cleanups, keeping Indy beautiful day, that type of thing. And so I kind of had in mind that there was an impact that could be made there. But the specific experience I've had kind of in the field of politics with our voter registration drive, going to communities and canvassing, doing tabling in our community and at the Baxter YMCA, has made me so much more comfortable talking to people who aren't as politically engaged as I am. I feel like I've really learned how to meet people where they are and approach them. So even after the project finished, me and a few of my classmates, we went out and volunteered with an Indiana political party to canvass for voters in Marion County on behalf of a political party. UND Votes is a nonpartisan organization, but we thought, hey, we can do this to make a change in our community, use these same skills moving outside of UND Votes and ICC, still staying rooted in the community, but really sticking with what we believed in and using those skills moving forward.
What's the most important lesson you've learned from this experience? I know that's a tough one because it sounds like it has been an altering experience for you.
Probably that every voice genuinely matters. You know, if 2/3 of the population says, oh, well, I didn't vote because my vote didn't matter. Imagine if that 2/3 had voted and what swing they could have. We were really able to convince people like, oh, you know, people who said, oh, I'm not a partisan. I don't believe in politics, et cetera, et cetera. You know, asking things like, well, how do you feel about the giant pothole in front of your house? How do you feel about prescription drug prices? Those things, being able to connect politics back to those people in a way that was relevant to them outside of what is generally considered political discourse. I learned that connection is not difficult for most people. You just have to help them draw the line.
Liza, do you worry about the subject that I think we started the last segment talking about, a lot of the research that shows there are steep declines in civic engagement, in community engagement right now, that, you know, as hard as you're working, that it's almost like using a teaspoon to turn back a tidal wave. Is there a long-term solution to this? I'm going to get everybody's thoughts on it, but I'm starting with you.
I think so, and actually kind of to address what Ruth said about the your listener, Ruth. Mm-hmm. She was talking about how, you know, Girl Scouts get badges for civic involvement. And I was thinking as Allie was speaking, it was like, what a great thing that these young people who start out as Girl Scouts or Boy Scouts or they don't have campfire girls anymore, I guess, but that's what I was, are able then to go on to college. And maybe there was a gap in middle school, or maybe there was a gap in high school of their involvement in anything outside of that high school. But then all of a sudden, here are the Girl Scouts saying, oh, these are my people again. And I don't think it's an impossible task. I think there has to be more urgency than there has been. And I think of the middle schooler in Sweden who said, you know, I don't want my parents to have hope. I want my parents to jump up and down and say, this is a crisis for global warming is what she was talking about, and climate change. And I think as these conversations happen between the presidents, JR has very involved presidents on our board who talk about this, and they talk about how they can work together as campuses to go back to the compact. And I don't feel like it's impossible. I think that this, you know, it's a dynamic thing that just keeps moving. And it seems very nebulous when we're trying to describe what we do, but we put people together. We're connectors and we're catalysts. And we try to work with that compact that we have between campuses, and students get to meet each other. Allie met students from outside of UIndy when she was at our summit. And I think that's the hope.
JR, I mean, you referenced some of the, I mean, what Bowling Alone is now, mm-hmm. 25, 30
yes,
years old.
Is.
So
yeah.
This is a trend now of mm-hmm. of some long standing. Mm-hmm. And if anything, most of the numbers suggest it's getting worse rather than better.
Yeah. I mean, in fact, you know, Putnam's latest book he came out with 2 years ago called Our Kids.
Yeah.
Basically said that we are the most divided educationally in our country than we have ever been. But when we're having discussions about this tidal wave's coming in and are we trying to fix it with a teaspoon, I think we're really underestimating the power of our youth. So often I read in these studies, folks cite the millennial generation mm-hmm. as those who have completely messed up our world. And I would disagree with that in mm-hmm. many ways, and I won't get into that too much mm-hmm. in the show. Other than to say most millennials are now college professors. Mm-hmm. The average age of a millennial is like 32. And so they're teaching on campuses now. Our youth who are college students and high school students are not part of the millennial generation. And they have so much hope in the future. And they are starving, trying to find solutions and change. And they're eager. And we have to tap into that. And that's what we're trying to do. And when I see the hope that our youth mm-hmm. have, that gives me hope that we can turn the tide back and make a true difference.
Allie, you probably figured out I'm offering you the last word here, but I'm going to reframe the question ever so slightly. You know, colleges are big about telling students about what they expect of them. Flip it around. What would you expect of a college that was, preparing you to live in this world?
One thing I love about UIndy, and one thing that drew me to UIndy specifically, was that our motto is education, service for education. We it was really a kind of guiding light of me finding UIndy. I knew I wanted to stay in Indianapolis for college, be close to home, but not too close. And so it really helped me find a place where I felt like I fit, because I knew that no matter what I ended up doing, I wanted to help other students make a difference. I wanted to make a difference in the community. I'd like to get back to your last question a little bit, that kind of what is the solution? What is the answer to declining civic engagement? And I'm going to give a little bit of a controversial answer as a student. Require it. I think that the first day of my campaigns and elections class, when we were going through the syllabus and Dr. Wilson was outlining the requirements for tabling, for canvassing, I saw some people roll their eyes. They were like, do I really have to go and knock on a stranger's door and ask them if they're registered to vote? But I attended every day of tabling and every day of canvassing, and I was shocked to see how many of those students walked away saying, wow, that was easier than I expected, or wow, they were actually pretty interested. I feel like I helped them. Like, now they're going to go vote. I also, Dr. Wilson and I are kind of using UIndy Votes, especially in 2020, as a lens to study political attitudes and how civic engagement affects our political attitudes. And so we collected reflections from all the students who participated. And I was shocked to find that some of the students who seemed maybe the most apathetic really did draw a lot from the project, realizing that, you know, even if people aren't necessarily as engaged as I do, as I am, people don't maybe care as much as I do, we can still reach those people and help empower them to feel like they can make a difference in the political culture of our country.
We're talking about civic and community engagement through Indiana Campus Compact today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi. Or you can do what a listener has done and reach out to us via Twitter at WFYI. This listener writes, what is the future of campus and community engagement? These are huge institutions in our communities that have vast resources beyond students. How can they help our neighborhoods, K-12 and other systems or organizations? Also gives a shout out to you, Allie, says you are a great guest on this show.
Oh, thanks. So, I appreciate it.
So, JR, you know, it's that is a question actually that gets asked, that many of these colleges, universities, you know, are massive parts of the community, but in, as you alluded to at the beginning, they're often perceived in some ways to be a part of, not a part of, but set aside from the community or distanced from it in some way.
I mean, we're seeing this change happen already in some aspects, maybe not as strong as some folks may want to see institutions engage. But what we're trying to do as an organization is help institutions see their place as an anchor in the institution, much like hospitals have, other large organizations. And like I mentioned earlier, being a part of the community, working in tandem to solve some of these problems. And as your listener tweeted, that's absolutely right. That includes education and not just higher education. That includes economy and such. And as our institutions, as we're looking at the scaffolding approach and working with them from multiple different angles, from student engagement all the way to the administrative piece about changing policies and ways they interact in their communities, I mean, one of our goals is to see that exact thing, that 25 years from now, institutions will see themselves as not just a piece of the community, but an extension of the community working hand in hand to solve some of these problems. And it's not a discussion of you have more resources or I have fewer resources, but how are we working together to solve some of our most problems? And sometimes that's money and sometimes it's not. Sometimes it's knowledge, sometimes it's people power and such.
So, Allie, I'm going to reframe the question I asked you because I think the listener actually did it better than I did, which is really... You know, as someone who has an interest in civic engagement, how would you restructure a college or university experience so that it's more effective, you know, not just in preaching these ideals, but practicing them as well? And, you know, many colleges and universities are trying to deal with this right now, but as is often the case with institutions that are trapped by, you know, both tradition and inertia, they're they're doing the dance with all the grace of a hippopotamus trying to do Swan Lake. Yeah. You know, so it's difficult. If you were queen and were able to just redefine these things, how would you reorganize a college or university so that it is a more effective community force?
I think that making civic engagement part of the curriculum is key. Especially like we talked about earlier, the way that technology has sort of alienated some students in my generation, we're less likely to have deep interpersonal connections with people. By making that a requirement, even in a minor way, even, you know, offering class credit for a few hours a week, something in that realm, or for a specific class, providing requirements to do service engagement in that area, field of study, I think a lot of students will dread it at first. There's definitely a level of nerves to that. But I find that students like me aren't so nervous the second time, and they aren't nervous at all the third time. And so if we can really instill that idea that you can have an impact, that your work matters, that you should be grounded in your community, I think we can counteract that inertia.
Well, it's the same question to you.
Actually, that is going to have to change. The Higher Learning Commission, which is an accreditation mm-hmm. body for campuses in this area and kind of all over the place too, but mostly here, they have just announced that community engagement is going to be a criteria for accreditation. So campuses are going to have to make that part of their work with students. So kind of like tailgating off what Allie said, that make it a requirement for students, it's going to be a requirement also for campuses. And in fact, that's one of the things, just to bring it back a little bit to Indiana Campus Compact, we had Karen Solomon, who is part of the Higher Learning Commission, come and give a preview of the beta criteria that will be part of this new community engagement requirement. So that's one of the ways we'd want to try and help with the reframing, like you said.
JR, I'm going to give you the last word on the subject,
mm-hmm.
which is same question here. Picking up on what the listener said, how do they become more effective partners in their communities?
Well, I'm going to give a very nerdy answer and try to keep it as simple as possible. I go back to policy of institutions of higher education, and while the North Central Association can change some of this stuff, what it really comes down to is we have to change policies at our institutions to make it easier for faculty and staff to engage their students in their communities without penalty. And that's rethinking the way that we teach.
And that will have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests. J.R. Jamison, he's Executive Director of Indiana Campus Compact, Director of Communications for ICC, Lisa Donovan Blomquist, and Allie Nickerson, a University of Indianapolis student who also is active with ICC, for what's been a lively conversation. I've enjoyed talking with all three of you. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
And I'd like to thank our listeners, as always, for some good questions and comments. I am John Krall. You have been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.